when he walked out the door, I said, "Mom, I know what I want to be when I grow up." And she was like, "What's that, baby?" I said, "I want to be a police officer." She says, "No, no, no, you want to be a nurse." We're all called to be ambassadors of peace, right? So all of us can experience that on this side of life. But I'm also a pastor and a community leader as a chaplain. If we come on the same page, we can at least come to a common ground. What did we collectively do to fix the problem?
I'm taking you to jail because you broke the law.
However, this one moment does not have to defeat you nor define you. You can change the trajectory of your life.
Tonight's episode is dedicated to the tragedy of Lewiston, Maine. We want to acknowledge and remember all of the community members, family members, first responders, and medical workers who were impacted by this terrible tragedy. Please keep them in your hearts and minds. Be safe and be well.
Welcome to Respond Resilience, along with my co-hosts, Dr. Stacey Raymond and Bonnie Rumley, LCSW, EMT. I'm David Dashinger. In this episode, we'll be speaking with retired law enforcement sergeant and ambassador of peace,
Edie Darling,
about bridging the gap between community and law enforcement, her chaplaincy in the Department of Detention and Corrections, and her mission as ambassador of peace. Please like and subscribe. Our YouTube channel is Responder Resilience. We're on Facebook, Responder Wellness Inc., and Responder TV, bbsradio.com, all the podcast platforms, and check out our website, respondertv.com, for past episodes and guest information. We'll be right back to speak with Edie Darling after this.
In this family, more of us die by our own hands than by the hazards of the job. In this family, up to a quarter of 911 dispatchers have symptoms of PTSD. In this family, our mental health and wellness are in crisis while responders are quietly suffering. In this family, many struggle with job-related stress, burnout, trauma, sleep disruption, substance abuse, and marriage problems. In this family, we can help the helpers with vital information and resources, resilience strategies, and success stories of overcoming the obstacles. In this family, no one is alone. Welcome to Responder Resilience with co-hosts retired Lieutenant David Dashinger, Dr. Stacey Raymond, and Bonnie Rumley, LCSW, EMTB.
Today we're joined by Edie Darling. She's a retired law enforcement sergeant and former senior chaplain at the Department of Detention and Corrections Bureau, serving the citizens of Pinellas County for nearly three decades. Her commitment to people and the community has extended beyond the walls of law enforcement. She's an author, spiritual leader, motivational speaker, true humanitarian, and most importantly, she is our community's ambassador of peace. Edie, a warm welcome to Respond to Resilience.
Thank you for having me. It is a true honor to be here.
So Edie, I would like to start by asking you, what inspired you to go into law enforcement?
So it's interesting. You know, I was talking to a couple of my friends recently, and they said to me, Edie, we always knew you were going to go into law enforcement because you were that kid who always rolled around on the bicycle patrolling and telling everybody, you know, you really shouldn't be doing that, right? So it didn't surprise them when I made that announcement that I was going into law enforcement. But what transpired, as you can imagine, community and law enforcement were not friends when I was growing up. I'm 53. And at the time, as a child, my mother and my father would always tell us about the things that were occurring when they were growing up, of the water hoses, the lynchings, and just how Black and Browns were not treated equally. So, of course, you know, my mother would always tell us, hey, if you ever saw the police, run. Because they're not your friend. They're going to always try to lock you up or say some racial epithets towards you and so forth. So that's what our community did. We ran. Well, on this one particular day, my two brothers were outside. My brothers were, one was in the military, one was former military, and they were working on my brother's vehicle outside of my mother's house. And I was still in high school. And My two brothers come running in the house and they are screaming in a way that, you know something's wrong. And they were saying a few words that we didn't say in our house. And so I was just thinking my mama was going to just tear them apart. So anyway, so they came in telling my mother that they had been robbed at gunpoint by five guys. And so my mother said, we're going to have to call the police. Well, me being, I'm kind of vocal. And I said, no, mom, we can't call the police. Do you remember everything that you ever told us about the police? And she says, we're going to have to call. So at that time, a young white male came into our home and interviewed my two brothers, and my mom invited him to sit at our dinner table. So I wasn't allowed to say anything. I was just like a fly on the wall. And I'm watching how he is talking to my mother with such great respect. He was talking to my brother individually, getting their side of the story. And then he said, you know, I can't make you any promises, you know, that we're going to find these individuals, but we're going to do our best. So when he went to go walk outside the door, he shook everybody's hand. But when he went to go shake my hand, at that moment, I felt a transference of like a torch that I was just like, oh, my God, I want to do what he did. And so my mother said goodbye to him. And when he walked out the door, I said, Mom, I know what I want to be when I grow up. And she was like, what's that, baby? I said, I want to be a police officer. She says, no, you want to be a nurse. And I was like, no, I want to be a police officer. And so my journey, I went to the police academy in 1993, of course, graduated, and then went into law enforcement in 1994. And it's been the best journey ever.
That's a great story.
I love that story. And I have one on a bike myself who likes to tell everyone what's going on. So I wonder what's in that future.
Trust me, it's probably a police officer.
Being nosy.
I love your story. And it speaks to some of the real divides and things that have happened historically. Could you talk a little bit about your passion to bridge the gaps that you see? And I think that the way you described it was so eloquent. And I can tell that you have a true passion for doing this work and for bridging. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Absolutely. You know, growing up in my community, I could tell you that a lot of things that people were doing is because of true ignorance, if that makes sense, right? Mm-hmm. Because when I got into law enforcement and I'm patrolling around, I'm noticing that, you know, some individuals are sending their children off to law school. There is a good communication between community and law enforcement and other areas that didn't look like me, where kids would just go, hi, police. So it was a shock to me, you know, I'm riding through communities and they're waving. And I'm like, what's this all about? So just as most people would think, driving through an African-American community, me being an African-American woman and driving through a community that didn't look like me, I was kind of like, what's with this warm reception? And then I also realized that they did conflict resolution in certain communities that they didn't do in other communities. So I was like, wait a minute, there is a huge gap here. Why is there such a difference between one community and another and how we respond? And why is one community being educated about the laws and other communities are not being educated about the laws? So in my spare time, I did a show called Wake Up with Edie Darling. And in that, I would invite community leaders to the table, individuals from the community to the table, and we would actually have dialogue and being able to answer questions that most people would be afraid to answer. But those individuals who came to the table, meaning the community leaders, were apt to answer those hard hit questions that most people don't want to have. And I don't understand. I'm just being real. I don't understand why are we in silos and why are we trying to, I feel like it appears that we're not trying to be open in communication. Instead, we're trying to be closed in communication. And so that has been my passion throughout my years of service. I would also encourage individuals to go on peace walks, and where communities who, you know, joining together all cultures and walking, because I also am not retired, just law enforcement retired, but I'm also a pastor and a community leader as a chaplain. And so I believe that all of us, regardless of our skin color, our sexual orientation, whatever our political affiliations are, that we can come together united as one people for the common good of all. And so that's what I've done to help bridge that gap between community and law enforcement.
Really powerful stuff, I think, for police organizations to understand. We don't have to tear everything down. And if we focus on the most important job, the most important position is the chief of police, and we get that hire right, everything else takes care of itself. It really does. Organizational culture. I think if we change that, matter of fact, I know we change that, we're going to see cops come back. We're absolutely going to see cops come back. We're not going to have people, good people left to do this job as hard as it is when we now create cultures where we don't even value them or we don't appreciate them. Hopefully a lot of leaders that read this book and say, you know what? I need to get into therapy. I need to talk to somebody. I need to get a coach. I need to freaking figure out who I am. I just hope that happens, because you'd be welcome to join the club, because we're all in this thing together.
Yeah, I love your podcast platform, and it sounds like you've done some amazing work there. And one of the things we love about doing it is the people we get to interview and speak with, like yourself. And so can you talk about some of the things you've learned as a podcast host speaking with people, leaders in your community?
Absolutely. You know, I think sometimes when we get community leaders on that, there can be a divide. They don't necessarily know what the citizens are actually saying or willing to hear what they're saying and do something about it. Mm-hmm. That has been the biggest bridge, right? Where people just feel as though they don't have a voice. But for those who have come on to the show, they want to help to bridge that gap and really want to hear what people have to say and not just be, I'm just going to hear what you say, but actually take the time to listen and do something about it. Can we fix every problem in the community? I think if we come on the same page, we can at least come to a common ground, not necessarily it being all about, okay, well, what did you do, you know, to fix this problem, but what did we collectively do to fix the problem? And so that's what I found with the individuals who have come onto the show as far as the community leaders, because this is the one thing that I'll always say to people. I don't want to hear your complaints. Does that make sense? People complain every day. But what are we doing about it? What's action, the action behind it? And so if we can say, OK, instead of just complaining about it, we can come together and do something about it.
So it's being part of the solution, not part of the problem.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So I understand that you were a senior chaplain,
yes,
in the Department of Detention and Corrections. So yes. What was that like? And also transitioning from being a police officer and now moving into corrections, what was that like for you, the difference?
So I have an interesting story to tell you about this really quick. So when I was in law enforcement, I always said I wanted to be the senior chaplain out in the jail of the same agency that I was working in. And so during a season when I could not put my gun belt on, I then applied for the senior chaplain position and got it. And so then once my condition got better, I then went back out into law enforcement. But one of the things that I've always felt is that we all have a right to worship the way that we feel spiritually in our God within us, whether we're Christian, whether we're Buddhist, whether we're Muslim. I can also remember this one Satanist, who wanted to talk to me one day. And I said, well, I'm not a Satanist, but you get where I'm going. But however, everybody. So going in with a spirit of non-judgment, that was one of the things that I wanted to make sure that the chaplains who serve the inmate population, they did not go in with a spirit of judgment. Regardless of what you believe, It is about what is the individual and what do they believe. And although we weren't able to get them all of their religious materials, because as you can imagine in a, you know, jail situation, you can't bring in everything, but then making the environment as such is that if they had time, whether they needed to go for a time of prayer or whether they needed to come together, I was that person to coordinate with the other chaplains and lay individuals and providing that those resources for them. And so I was very happy. I'll give you this story really quick. So for the Muslim brothers and sisters that were in the jail, they would ask me what sect of Muslim that I was. And I was, you know, I didn't say I was Muslim or I didn't say I was Muslim, but it made me feel good that they felt that I was fighting for them and for their religious beliefs, that they would ask me what sect that I was. Or if I went in to serve the Jewish population, they would ask, you know, what are you Jewish? You know what I mean? And so it was just beautiful that when you can not come in with a spirit of judgment, but a heart of service, that someone receives you in as their own. And that made me very proud. Ooh, excuse me.
Well, that's a wonderful story, and it speaks to who you are. And I want to ask another question. Do you feel that your chaplaincy and your spiritual work allows you to walk into some of these conversations, negotiations, in a way that maybe lets people be more vulnerable and disarms them?
Absolutely. When people can feel that you actually love them and that you actually care about them, they're more apt to have a conversation with you in safety. And that is the part that I strive to do, is set an atmosphere of safety where people can sit down, whether in a pastoral role, in a law enforcement role, or in a community forum role. But as a spiritual advisor, that's what I'm most, you know, proud of, is that people will say, you know what, I could have this conversation with you because I do feel safe.
Right. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Edie, let's rewind to 2013. It's a year I can relate to in terms of medical issues. I was diagnosed with stage 4 cancer that year and went through an arduous medical journey that kept me from being able to work for a while. And so can you share with us a little bit about your diagnosis and subsequent medical treatment? What happened in 2013?
So it actually started, to believe it or not, back in 2009. And I just kept saying, I feel something in my gut, you know, and I just couldn't figure it out. Right. And kept going to the doctor, and they were just like, we don't see anything. Right. We just don't see why you keep having this stomach issue or this pain. So in 2012, I had gotten down to soaking wet, 105 pounds. And being told, hey, listen, we know you're sick. But, you know, I'll never forget this one doctor gave statistics, like 100 people come into the hospital, 50% will just send them home because they're all good. And a certain percentage will stay. But then we could send them home. And then there's that 3 percentile of people that we have no treatment or cure for. And so at that moment, you know, like when you sit back and you say, I could see how some people can take those statistics and go sit in a corner and go cry or accept them and just die. But me being a woman of faith, this is what I said. I said, oh my gosh, you gave me the best news. That's one for the Father, one for the Son, and one for the Holy Spirit. I shall live and not die. So, of course, you know, they want to give you some counseling. We know this is difficult. You know? So anyways, I digress. I wind up going to another doctor at the time, and he was telling me pretty much the same thing. And he said, but I think there's this one doctor that might be able to help you. And so I refused to leave that office that day. I'll never forget that. I was like, they were like, here's the card. You know how they give you the card and they say, you know, you follow up with the doctor. And I was like, nope. I said, I'm not leaving here until you all make that appointment. So that way I can go away knowing that I have an appointment instead of trying to be so much time out. Because I knew time was of the essence. Hmm. So I was ultimately diagnosed with superior mesenteric artery syndrome. And so what's interesting about that is that when my doctor, who ultimately diagnosed me, right, he said, Edie, you've been complaining about this since 2009? I was like, yeah. He's like, you know what? You are a walking miracle. And so I was like, okay. So it did take me some time to recover. And that's in between the time that I left law enforcement, had to recover, from my condition. And then I was able to go into chaplaincy, right, to allow my body to continue to heal, because my heart, my passion was all about, being out on the road and helping individuals. But I will tell you the beauty of being in transition, right, that I could go in and serve the inmate population. Because people will think that it's sad that a lot of people look down on them, or that they want to make it appear that they are the derelicts of the community. What I can tell you is this: we all have had issues, and many of us are lucky that we were not the subject of a criminal investigation and found ourselves in locked up. And many of the individuals that are there, they've just made a mistake. But, you know, when they say serve your time, do your time if they're, guilty, but they can live a transformative life and do something with their lives. And so I'm just glad to see that I was able to see people genuinely turn their lives around. It's one thing to take somebody to jail, but it's another thing to see somebody come out of jail transformed. And that's right.
Beautiful. When it comes to mental wellness, I know one of the things that they struggle with is the short staffing, because they're always at work. Working 16 to 20 hour shifts, 4 or 5 days a week, it's real. What are you gonna do when you're in that timeout box? What are you gonna do when you're on the rubber gun squad? You have to go back to who you are as a person. For me, self-awareness starts with knowing who you are, understanding where you've been, understanding where you're going to go, and that's simply what failures have I overcome. The most successful people I've seen is people that say, you know what? I know I'm working this 8 to 16 hour shifts 5 days in a row, 6 days in a row. I'm doing it for a purpose to make myself better.
It's clear to me, and I'm sure to David and Bonnie, that you enter a situation like a prison as a beacon of hope. I mean, you yourself, you know, were struggling with the medical issue, not sure if you were going to live or die, got the diagnosis, and then in your recovery, you know, you are working with inmates. I've worked with inmates as a psychologist and, for a little over a year. And it is remarkable to when you talk to them, they are really not different from myself or any of us. Really, right. They made a mistake, they got caught, and now they're serving their sentence. But how important it is to look past that mistake and say, you know, you can turn this around. You know, you have a second chance.
Yeah.
Don't give up.
Right.
Don't give up.
So yeah. Can I tell you a story about that real quick?
Sure. I'll never forget. Yeah, I love your stories.
Thank you. I'll never forget. There was, as I'm taking people to jail, and I would say to them, listen, you broke the law because I'm taking you to jail because you broke the law. Mm-hmm. However, this one moment does not have to defeat you nor define you. You can change the trajectory of your life. And so having individuals in the back, even though, I couldn't talk to them about God or anything like that, but being able to talk to the soul of an individual and being able to let them know that don't just focus on this one moment, but that you can move past it and do something positive and turn it around. And that's what I enjoy being able to do, is see that, you know, because my roles were very defined, meaning law enforcement, done, chaplain, now in this role, of course, walking out, seeing it from another perspective, taking people, but now ministering to people and ministering to the heart of an individual is something powerful.
I want to go back to something you shared during your personal journey. It always seems that something really difficult is placed on us for us to learn from it. And I think a lot of people try to fight it, or they get resentful, they get angry about it. I mean, we all have a host of emotions when something hard is going on in our life, right? But ultimately, we have a decision during that time. Why and what am I meant to learn from this situation now? Yeah. And I think ultimately, and I've learned this in my own life through trials and hardships, ultimately, you come out a different person on the other side. And if you're open, whether it's spiritually, in all of the ways that you can try to be open, it closes doors and opens doors for you. And so that's something I think we would all like our listener. Resilience is something that we talk about every episode, right?
Right.
And part of that resilience sometimes is, pardon my French, but embracing the suck and saying, okay, this is a rough patch.
Yeah.
And I need to get through this in order to understand what's meant for me on the other side of it.
You know, it's powerful because when you were talking, it took me back to those moments of what is my life like? What is it going to be like? But I had a sense of peace that I knew that I would be on the other side of it. So I don't like it when people complain at all, right? And I actually have a sign outside of my door, no drama allowed in this house. So when people walk in, they're like, oh my gosh, no drama, no drama. So with that being said, I see the peace. I feel peace. And I want people to experience that peace, truly a peace that surpasses all understanding. And when you get on this side of life, all of those other things that you thought were so important, the arguments, the fussing, the fighting, and we know being a first responder, you know, we have lives too now. I mean, yeah, we're helpers, but we also have lives, and, you know, drama has a tendency to follow us. But what I decided to do was, no, I knew that there was a switch. There was a transformation that took place. And I wanted people to really experience this without having to go through a true trial. As you mentioned, David, when you were diagnosed, you know, with stage 4 cancer, and you don't have to feel this way when you, you know what I'm trying to say? It doesn't seem to have to take a life-altering situation to get you here. But hey, if you listen to us, we could tell you it could be great on this side of life. And that's what I want people to experience. And that's why, as why I push for to be the ambassador, truly, we're all called to be ambassadors of peace, right? But to really push the ambassadorship so all of us can experience that on this side of life. Yeah.
Well, so much great stuff. And I think you dropped a beautiful title in there a little while back, ministering to the heart. That's such a beautiful phrase.
Come on. Check it.
Let's look at the timeline of your various careers now. Did you return to law enforcement after your illness subsided? And what was that like?
So I was the senior chaplain in the Department of Detention and Corrections Bureau of the agency. And then all of a sudden, you know how it is, right? I go to my doctor's appointment and my doctor says, Edie, oh my gosh, I forgot if they were CAT scans or MRIs, whatever it was, right? They look phenomenal. If you wanted to ever return to law enforcement, you could. I said, oh, really? Sign right here for me, please, so I can go back out.
Get that form signed.
Exactly. And sure enough, he did. And mm-hmm. So I went back to the road in 2018 as a deputy, right? Mm. I went from, talk about a huge pay cut, but I'm not going to go there. You got to do it for the heart. Not for the money. Anyway, so I go back out to the road and start pretty much, from the bottom. And then I remember those same individuals that I've mentored over the years that, inspired them to go and take the sergeant's exam or to be a corporal or to move forward. They said to me, Edie, you've always inspired us to be promoted. Why don't you go that route? You've always said you wanted to be a sergeant, So of course I was like, okay, put my words back at me, right? Like when somebody put your words, you minister to them and then they throw it back on you. It's like,
I've been right in that hot seat. I get it.
So I became a corporal shortly after. And then I took the sergeant's exam. People, they thought I was a little nuts, because I was just like, if I'm gonna study, I'm gonna go all in, right? Mm-hmm. So I started studying, took the exam, passed the exam. But in the interim, I was finishing up my bachelor's degree in public safety administration. So I was doing a lot of studying. And so I say to my husband has always said to me, babe, from the time that we've been together, I can't remember a time you weren't studying. I say, I gave you a year of my life. So then I became a sergeant. And then afterwards, I can tell, when we start, when your body speaks to you. And so my body began to speak to me again. But I will tell you, I feel that I accomplished every goal that I set out to accomplish in touching lives, mentoring the young people, because that was one of the reasons why I wanted to go back out. Because, of course, during the George Floyd incident, you could tell, once again, community and law enforcement weren't friends. And I saw people, just not being in law enforcement at the time, right? Back in 2018, I could see what I felt, people being afraid of people who didn't look like me. And so I was like, got to do something about this. So I went back out and really wanted to educate our law enforcement brothers and sisters to say, you don't have to be afraid of people who don't look like you. We serve everyone, and you have to look at the humanity of the individual and serving people in truth and justice and liberty for all. And so I just recently retired in June, finally, in June of this year, and where I'm out of the uniform for good, and law enforcement uniform. We'll say it that way without the gun belt.
Okay.
And moving into, that next step, which is as an ambassador of peace and spreading peace and on every platform that I can to just let people know it's possible.
Well, congratulations on your retirement. David and I have joined the club in our own ways.
Yeah.
And moved on to the podcast with Stacey, which is, it's our way of continuing the mission of first responders.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Yes. And it's beautiful. I want you to know, I'm so proud of you all and what you are doing out here. And for your listening audience, they need to do everything they can to help take this to the next level, because it is so helpful for our brothers and sisters out here who are fighting the good fight of faith for our community. But yet sometimes they put themselves on the back burner. So I thank you for helping to heal the hearts of the first responders.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Oh, we appreciate that.
Thank you.
It doesn't seem like there's any challenge that you won't face, Edie. So I know that you are now seeking a presidential nomination. For as a United States international ambassador at large, ambassador of peace. So that's remarkable. Can you tell us about that?
So, yes. All right. So, you know, being a woman of God and a woman of faith, one morning I woke up. I know the date specifically. It was on September the 1st, 2019, right? Mm-hmm. And I heard the Lord say, seek presidential nomination to become an international ambassador at large, ambassador of peace, right? And so I just got on Facebook. You know how it is, right?
What does one do when God speaks to them?
Right? So I told everybody, I said, hey, y'all, I'm going to be seeking presidential nomination to become an international ambassador at large, ambassador of peace. And everybody was supportive. And I got letters from many individuals in the community who knew the work that I was doing to bridge that gap between community and law enforcement and bring peaceful practices to our community. But then, right, I did the research. You know, it's amazing how God has a sense of humor, right? He'll tell you to do something. Yeah. And then if you had did the research about it beforehand, before making the announcement, you know you wouldn't do it, right? So then I was like, this is kind of like big deal. You know, I got to go before Congress. You know, the Senate, and be confirmed. I was like, oh my word. So, but you know what? At the end of the day, I always say it's not about a title. Does that make sense? Yeah. It is the mission of peace is bigger than any of us. When we look around our nation right now and seeing the plight of our people, not just our nation. You are looking around other nations and you're seeing fires and you're seeing earthquakes and you're seeing massive flooding. And, you know, the heart, you know, what I always say, what happens to one should impact the lives of all of us as a as humanity. And so that's what I would like to be able to do, is to go to those places where there's hurt around the world and be able to impart peace and give people peace to, despite what we are going through, to let them know that they are loved and they are not forgotten, because that's really what's going on with people. They feel that they've been forgotten. Mm-hmm. Do you remember when Hurricane Katrina happened? Mm-hmm. And you remember when all the flooding took place and people were standing on top of buildings? Mm-hmm. And the one thing that you heard them say is, as if they, in a nation as big as ours, right, that they just felt that they had been forgotten. And so imagine a world that feels that way. Yeah. And being able to let them know, we haven't forgotten you. You're on the heart of who we are, and we're here to spread that love and share love and this love of God with you. Yeah.
Such a beautiful message.
It totally really is. Yeah. And such a beautiful way to carry forward your work in law enforcement and chaplaincy and who you are. Just amazing to see. And you're creating this, right? Is this a position that already exists, or is this something that you...
Thank you, David, for asking that question. This position, this is the other thing about God. You know that, right? You're asking me to have a president do what? To create a position? So, no, the ambassador piece at large does not exist, right? There's like an ambassador of religion. There's ambassadors that are out there. I don't want to make it seem like there's no ambassadorships, right? Mm-hmm. However, when the Lord told me to make this announcement, the position doesn't exist. So I'm asking the president to create this position because peace is necessary. And can you imagine for a moment if there were incidences that happen within your community, and knowing that someone from you know, from your government, so to speak, comes out, and that they can offer you peace. They can offer you solace. They can offer you to let you know that you're not forgotten, and that you can just feel really good about that someone cares for me. And so, but I will tell you this, whether the president himself makes the formal appointment or not, I don't need someone to tell me that I'm an ambassador of peace.
You are.
I am an ambassador of peace.
Right.
And
true.
So would I love to take this on a national and international level? Absolutely. However, the work that we do, it honors the Heavenly Father, and that's all that matters to me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You're right. And the title piece, I think that resonates with David and Stacey and I too. You know, none of us do things for the title, right? People right. that are in this work for the better are doing it to help their brothers mm-hmm. and sisters and to help yeah. the community. And that's all you need to know inside yourself when you put your head on your pillow at night. Am I doing everything humanly possible?
Yeah.
And I think we're all doing that work.
Yes. To see us all walking in our giftings, that's one of the things that I really want to see individuals truly be set free from the bondages mm-hmm. of this world. We've all, in some shape, form, or fashion, been hindered from walking in our true gifts. But if we could all see the light that is in each of us and support that light, which is in each of us, we could all move together. And I always say, your success is my success. My success is your success, because we mm-hmm, are uh-huh. doing the work right. that we came into this world to do. And so that's what I love seeing people grow, and I love seeing people blossom and walking in their truth. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This has been an amazing conversation. Please share with us where people can find you out there on the internet, social media, any other channels.
Yes. So right now, if they wanted to email me, they can email me at awakenyourdormantgifts@gmail.com. awakenyourdormantgifts@gmail.com. And I'm on social media. You can find me at Edie Darling. That's E-D-I-E Darling. Ambassador of Peace. So they can find me on Facebook that way, and they can also find me on other platforms that way, as far as YouTube is concerned as well.
Fantastic. And how about your podcast radio show? Is that also on
Oh
YouTube?
Yeah. So yes, it is. So the podcast, I did start that back up, Wake Up with Edie Darling. So it's on Spotify, and it's also being aired on WUJM Jams, 99 Jams, The Berg, on Tuesday mornings at 8 a.m. and on Spotify on Sundays at 10 a.m. So on that show, you will hear people telling their stories. If I may just tell you this mm-hmm. really quick, that it's one thing when a person's voice can be heard of how they've turned a negative situation mm-hmm. around into a positive situation, and that they are actually doing yeah. something in the community to transform the lives of others. And so that's what I do, is help them tell their story of how they're doing just that.
Great. Well, thank you so much for sharing your stories with us. It's a wonderful evolution, your entire story together. So we really are grateful. And we hope that our viewers and listeners were able to glean some ideas for themselves from listening to you today.
Well, I'm humbled. And thank you so much for having me on your show. And I will do everything I can to help you all as well, because it is well needed.
Thank you.
Thank you.
When you talk to the president, you can tell him that first responders need more help. And if he can help.
I know, right? This has gone through two presidents so far, but it's been 4 years. But listen, it's going to happen.
There's no doubt. Well, Edie, thank you again for being with us. This was a wonderful conversation. And yeah, keep up your mission and the beautiful work you're doing. It is very inspiring.
Thank you.
Namaste.
Namaste.
Please remember to like and subscribe. Our YouTube channel is Responder Resilience. We're on Facebook, Responder Wellness Inc. and Responder TV, bbsradio.com, Apple Podcasts, all the podcast platforms, and check out our website, respondertv.com, for all our past episodes and guest information. Till the next time, stay safe, be kind to yourself. Take care.